Welcome to the Pondering Popper podcast, your premier Popper podcast. For the moment, we are going to be discussing not just Popper, but life. I'm your host, Cali Kies, and I'm here with Diego. How's it going, Diego?
Good. Challenge just wrapped up, and we are also joined by Frusile.
Thank you for having me.
Frusile, why don't you tell us something about yourself and just kick it off?
Okay, so if, first off, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And for anyone listening, if this is your first time, listening to me, I was previously the host of the Popper Players podcast, which at this time is on hiatus. And it may return someday in the future, but at this time it's just a project which is on hiatus. I'm sort of known in the Popper world. I'm a bit of a dinosaur in that regard. If you played Popper Leagues in 2018 and 2019, you saw my name up there on the leaderboard for every league for 2018 and 2019, but I simply have not played the challenge since the first week of May of 2020. So if you're new to Popper, you're probably very unfamiliar with me, and this could be a very good opportunity to learn a little bit about my worldview. Now, when I made the Popper Players podcast, the goal of that podcast was for anyone who listened during the time which it ran was that they would be better informed than anyone who is not listening to the podcast. So in short, anyone who chose to listen to the Popper Players podcast while it was current was just in a better position than anyone who is not listening. And that is also my goal for today, is for anyone who listens to this podcast episode will leave better off and just be in a better position than those who have not. So that is my goal for the day.
I'm ready to hear it.
Well, we're going to be talking about losing. This game, Magic, Popper, it just in life. We glorify winning, right? And the thing is that winning is easy, right? It feels good, right? We're naturally rewarded in that winning feels good. So navigating winning is pretty easy compared to navigating losing, at least. And I don't want to presume that there aren't any pitfalls for winning, right? It's important that we acknowledge there are pitfalls for people who are winning. There's entitlement. There's complacency. There is survivor's bias. But losing has so many more pitfalls to it. And being able to navigate losing is a much more important skill. And I mean this not just on the micro level of a single Magic the Gathering tournament, but also just the macro level of life in general, right? And it's sort of easy to navigate winning better. You can make simple adjustments that would improve your win rate. Don't play Magic the Gathering if you're tired. Don't play Magic the Gathering if you're hungry or otherwise distracted. Congratulations, you now win more games. But finding ways to lose less is difficult. And when looking at this at a single tournament level, right, I think it's way easier to make top 8 if you start off 3-0 than it is to make top 8 if you start off 0-1. And you're down a game in round 2. A lot of people give up. And even, say, if you start 0-2 in a tournament and rally back to make top 16, that's probably more difficult to do from not a gameplay perspective, because obviously, generally speaking, the loser's bracket has maybe fewer skillful opponents than the winner's bracket, right? At least in theory. But mentally speaking, being able to rally from the loser's bracket, down a match, down a game, down 2 matches, what have you. It's just a lot more difficult. And so what I want to start with is, and I do have this premise, the premise being that losing and how we navigate loss is more important than how we navigate winning. And I want to start things off with a thought experiment. And I offered this to you guys a few days ago, and I'm actually glad that neither one of you took me up on having a few days to think about this thought experiment. Because instead of a theoretical, we're just going to discuss what happened to me yesterday. It's the same experiment, but we have a real-world example as opposed to a theoretical one. Yesterday, I drove down to the border of Oklahoma and Texas to play poker at one of the larger poker rooms in America. And I brought with me $1,000 because I'm playing mid-stakes poker. It costs $500 if you want to buy in for the maximum, which I do. And I wanted a chance in case I lost to get my money back. So we had $1,000 in our pocket, previous me and, you know, current me, the royal we. Go ahead and I battle for a bit and I go ahead and take a break to go get dinner. You know, I walk over to the Italian place and before I leave, I count how much I have in front of me on the table. And then when I go to get my dinner, I count how much is also in my pocket. And I find that I have $1,480 at this point in time. And so I eat my dinner, take a nice break, nice little walk, and I go back and I battle. And I have a couple of really rough hands in a row, and I look down and I have, including the money in my pocket, maybe $800 to work with all of a sudden. But I rallied back, and I got some hands, you know. It wasn't just all skill. It rarely is all skill. Even in magic, it's rarely all skill. There is the element of luck. But at any rate, I wind up leaving at the end of the day with $1,210 total. My question for you, did I win $210 or did I lose $270? Because when I went to go get dinner, I had $1,480 and I could have just driven back home then.
I'm going to have to say that your decisions were based on your plan, and your plan was to play it out. And the middle of it wasn't really something that you could have taken into account. So at the end of the day, that's the thing that's going to matter. I've seen this for myself in relation to the wacky cryptocurrency stuff that's going on, but I think BK on Constructed Resources said that when you kick yourself for something that you could have taken a chance but you didn't know how it was going to go out, then you can't, like, it's the same as walking past a roulette table and being sad that you didn't bet it all on 20 when you see it just hit 20. So you're not going to be able to predict the future, and you wanted to do the best that you possibly could at the moment. I would take it as a win. It's certainly going to feel bad, and that's something that you have to get over. That would probably sit with me for a while. But in Magic, I think it's similar to when you win or lose and you look at the top of your deck. Because that next card is going to be something that's going to affect what may or may not have happened. And getting stuck on the hypotheticals is not something that's going to help you advance or kind of get over what happened in the moment. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
Diego, before you answer, Diego, I want you to know that I will accept two different answers as what I perceive to be the correct answer. Callie's was not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a personal, one of my personal struggles is I have a really bad gambling habit. It's just something I've had to lock my card. I've had to, at various points in my life, it's been tickets, it's been sports betting. For a while it was opening Magic packs. But that's a constant kind of question that plagues me. Is like, okay, I walked away. Like, with your example, you, at one point, you take a look, up 14, you're up, like, $1,400, or you're up $400. You end $200 down. For me, I treat that as a loss of $200 because you had, there was a point in time where you had that amount of money. At the end of the day, you made the decision to go back and continue. For me, one of the things that, like, obviously I have trouble not going back and continuing, but I'll try and completely minimize, obviously with poker and when there's a buy-in, it's a lot harder, but I'll try and minimize the amount. I'll try and make sure I stay in the positive. But yeah, when you, at the end of the day, it is losing $200 when at one point you did have $1,400.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, now that you say that, I can see why you would come at it from the aspect of that it is a loss in the logical sense.
Yeah, I think...
So I said that I would have accepted two different answers. The question ultimately boiled down, the question is just, did I win $210 or did I lose $270? I would have accepted either yes or both. I would not accept anything else as correct. I think it's very interesting that you guys both chose other sides, both sides of this coin. What's important here is the exercise. It's important to recognize that both of these things happened depending on where we draw the line, right? And I would say that, generally speaking, if I were to choose, Callie's perception is far less dangerous than Diego's perception here. Diego is choosing to view this through the negative lens, and Callie is choosing to view it through the positive lens. But I prefer to just look at this through both lenses and recognize that both of these things happened at different times, right? So then we see that reality is not always objective, right? We have some control over how we perceive situations, because one of you guys thinks I won $210 and the other one thinks I lost $270, and both these things happened, and it's actually up to me how I get to choose what happened, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, yeah, so like I said, I would have accepted both, or I would have accepted yes as the correct answers. Anything else is not incorrect. You're not wrong. Neither one of you guys is wrong. It's just incomplete. The answers are incomplete, right? And what the important part of this is recognizing that we have control to some degree over shaping our own realities through perception and choosing how we want to look at things. And this is really just a very fancy version of, is the glass half full or is the glass half empty? Well, both. Or if you choose to look at it just as objectively as possible, the glass has water in it, right? Mm-hmm. You just then, if you were to be as objective as possible, that's all you would recognize. You wouldn't assign a value to the water. You would just recognize that there is water in the glass. So where I want to go with this is that language shapes reality. And I want to sort of work this premise through. Language shapes reality. If I were to go to a tribesman in South Saharan Africa and offer them a Bitcoin for a goat, they wouldn't know if that's a good deal. Obviously, you guys know that's a tremendous deal because you know that a Bitcoin is worth thousands of dollars. I'm not going to assign a number because we don't know when the podcast is going to be published, right? And that thing swings. That value swings all the time. But they wouldn't know what the word Bitcoin means. They wouldn't know if I'm offering them a good deal or a bad deal. Alternatively, if I go to a tribesman in the Brazilian rainforest and say, hey, I really like your hat. I'll give you this iPhone for it. They don't know what an iPhone is. So they don't know if this is, there's, the word signifies nothing, right? And I want to move this away from just pure theoretical examples. So we can take away the theoretical examples and we can just show that how language shapes reality. Callie, what is Upstuck?
Upstuck?
Yeah, what's Upstuck?
That is not something I'm familiar with.
But you know what the word up means and you know what the word stuck means.
Yeah, you'd have to turn it around for me to understand the word.
But that's just it, is that there is something that word signifies to me that does not signify to you because you're unfamiliar with it, right? So that word has no bearing on your reality. Being upstuck is exactly what that thought experiment was. That's what we call that in poker. I'm upstuck at, you know, $210, where I'm up on the day, but I'm stuck from where I was. So that's what upstuck is. And that word has meaning, but it had no meaning to you until a second ago, right? So yeah, Diego, what is minimum defense frequency?
Yeah, I do not know.
But again, you know what the different words mean. You know what the word minimum means.
Yeah.
You know what defense means. And you know what frequency means.
Yes, I do.
But when I put them together, the word has no meaning to you. That phrase has no meaning to you. It signifies nothing. It's just sound and fury.
Yeah, I... Yeah, no.
It's just a mathematical formula for poker players for how they determine how to navigate rivers. There is a mathematical formula to determine whether or not you should make a call if you're bet into. I'm not going to be distracted in describing the math behind that, but it's called minimum defense frequency, and it's just a simple mathematical formula. And again, but it has no, those individual words have merit, but when I combine them, it means absolutely nothing to you, right? So language shapes reality in so much as our ability to understand it, right? If we don't know what words mean, they mean nothing to us, even though they mean everything objectively, right? Outside of our understanding of it. So I'm using these examples to show you that language shapes reality, right? And we're going to tie this back into losing, right? Well, avoiding emotional language avoids emotional responses, right?
Mm-hmm.
The opposite is true. By using objective language, that's the path towards having objective responses. And I want to use an example that everyone is going to be guilty of, both of you, myself, and every single listener on this podcast. It's called, I need to draw a land. No, you don't. You don't need to draw a land. No one's going to come in with a sword and cut your hand off if you don't draw a land. Your mom's not going to ground you for the next 3 months if you don't draw a land. You're not going to die of cancer if you don't draw a land. So the word need is inappropriate, right? But we're putting emotion, we're now attaching emotion to an outcome of a top deck by saying, we need this, right? And so you feel like you need it because you've used emotional language. And so the simplest first step to recognizing when you're using emotional language is the phrase I feel or I feel like. And if you catch yourself doing that, you'll notice that, well, you're reacting to something emotionally or you're processing it emotionally because you're using emotional language, right?
So yeah, absolutely.
If it's not useful, my goal here is that if it's not useful, discard it, right? That's my metric for navigating loss. If it's not useful, discard it. And you want to strive towards objectivity in language as much as possible. And Kelly, you've actually had a front row view of this, and though that you may not have recognized that's what I've been doing, but you've seen me do this over the last few weeks. I'm describing things which happen to me as either positive events or negative events. I'm not saying wow, I made a lot of money playing poker, or wow, I lost a lot of money playing poker. I'm just saying I've encountered a negative event or I've encountered a positive event. I'm not feeling. I'm just trying to think. I'm just trying to see it as objectively as possible by using the most objective language as possible, right? And there's also neutral events. That's a whole other conversation. But I actually have a little surprise for you boys. Since both of you made contents in the last 24 hours, I've watched you play Magic today. Both of you.
Oh, no.
And Are you ready for this? Kelly, I watched your league playthrough.
I'm ready.
I give you a B+ on your mental fortitude for it. I cannot give you an A because you were never put into a tough position. It looked like you played against 5 good matchups for your deck. So you were never on the back end of things. So you're never truly tested. But I mean, I still give you a B+ because for the most part, you just recognize what was important in the game and focused on that, which is where you want to be, right? However, I did catch you, and I sort of jumped around. I didn't watch the entire, every single play of the entire league. I just sort of popped around and watched a bit here and watched a bit there. I did catch you saying things like bummer, darn, and crap. One time you said, I feel pretty ahead right now. Well, you shouldn't feel that. You're either ahead or you're not. Like, it's an objective fact whether or not you're ahead in the game state.
That's true.
Don't bring your feelings into it. And you also said at one point, I'm looking for an island, please. Why you gotta ask nicely? You're either looking for an island or you're not looking for an island.
You know, I think that that's one of the things that is ingrained in the Magic culture is to talk to your deck and try to plead to the shuffler.
But by doing so,
it's certainly a learned behavior, I think.
But by doing so, you open yourself up to negative events and on an emotional level. So
yeah.
And I did want to give you, I was tempted to give you an A- simply because you didn't make fun of the turn one relic that was played against you. I might not have had the same maturity, so props to you for not mocking your opponent for playing turn one relic.
I may have mentioned it at one point, so you can keep the B+. But I think I said something about, well, to give context. My Boros Bully opponent led on turn one relic, and then Thraben Inspector. Upon the second Thraben Inspector, I happened to have Echoing Truth in my hand, so I got to blow them out by getting rid of both of their clues. And they were really banking on that card draw, leading them to have to cast Faithless Looting to discard two Battle Screeches. And those Battle Screeches being in the graveyard made their relic very precarious at the moment. So it led them to a position where I could have very much blown them out. And I think I might have said, hey, here this is probably going to be a... This position is not good for them because they may get blown out by me trying to get something back. And they're going to lose all their flashback cards.
Well, it's on our mutual acquaintance for putting that in his sideboard when his deck is a flashback deck, right? That's just a mistake in deck building, and you know he was punished for it in real time. But if you guys remember the few times that I've streamed, I have literally burst out laughing when my opponent has cast Relic against me. So I applauded your emotional maturity in that moment. Well, by recognizing that I lacked that exact response in terms of maturity. Speaking of maturity, Diego, it took me all of my emotional maturity not to let you know I was watching your stream today. I give you. Oh, sorry. I watched round 5
mm-hmm.
today.
Oh yeah.
You get a C-. Let's go through some of the things that you said. And these are direct quotes. These are direct quotes. Yes, that's what we want. When your opponent shuffled with Ponder instead of just stacking 3 cards in order and then drawing one. Like, my man, if you're getting that excited about your opponent shuffling with Ponder, which first off, let's just recognize, is mildly unsportsmanlike and something you would never do in a real game. Like, if you're sitting across the table from him,
I'm never saying that.
And they shuffled. Yeah, come on. Yeah, exactly. You're not fist pumping. And just like, you're not fist pumping me like, this guy shuffled with Ponder. This guy shuffled with Ponder. You're not doing that. You're not acting that way. But you were earlier. And there's a cost for that. The cost is, if you're getting that excited over something little like that, then you're going to get frustrated over something little as well. That's the opportunity cost, right? It's hidden. You don't recognize that in the moment when you're getting excited over something small. But it does mean that you're opening yourself on the back end of that same emotional bandwidth as opposed to being objective and just saying that that's preferable for me as a player, right? Yep. My opponent shuffled with Ponder. That's unfortunate for him.
I think there,
there's ways to phrase this. Yeah. That's not an emotional way to phrase it.
I believe there were also 17 times where I said, or where I was saying, two bottom, two bottom, two bottom, when someone was casting Preordain, in case that did not happen in the time you were watching the stream.
Yeah, you know, I was actually moderately surprised that you weren't just actively rooting against them hitting on Augur. Like, when they cast Augur, I was actually surprised you weren't just like, I hope you miss.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I think. I'm not going to pretend like I don't think that when someone casts Augur against me. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I hope they miss. But it's not something I'd ever see out loud, you know?
Yeah.
Well, other than this, just now. But, you know, we all want to win. But I have another direct quote for you. These are your exact words. We want to draw things like elephant guides. What do you want? Wanting is not the correct perspective here. You shouldn't want things in the middle of a game. You should just recognize what your good draws are and how you're going to navigate those situations when you do draw your good draws. And by contrast, you need to recognize what your worst draws are and what plays you're going to make when you draw those cards, which are unfortunate for you. As opposed to just want things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, you continually asked for forests. By having forest. Forest. Forest.
Yep.
Forest. During your upkeep, mind you, and just so you know, I am so tilted by your stops on MTGO. It's not even funny. It's not even funny.
Every time somebody will say that. I'm too used to
it. The last note I have here, and I sent a picture of my notes to Kelly. I can send a picture of my notes to you as well to show that I actually have this written on a piece of paper. It says, manifestation is not a thing, silly boy. But that's a separate conversation.
Tell me.
I think that's nonsense. I think it's pure nonsense. That said, you do have control over your perception of reality. I do not believe for a second that you have any sort of control over reality itself with your words and feelings. But you do have control over your perceptions of reality, which is what we're discussing, right? Within the context of losing, within the context of this game.
Yeah.
So I have some another example would be we have a message between Kelly and myself a few days ago in which you said, you ended a sentence with, I am unable to look objectively. Right?
Mm-hmm.
In our messaging that we had while we were setting up this interview. I'm not going to read all of our messages, but you ended the sentence with, I am unable to look objectively. Well, what you've created there is a self-fulfilling prophecy because of your choice of words. You have a self-limiting belief, right? That's what this is called, is a self-limiting belief, which leads to a self-fulfilling prophecy. So let's just change how we phrase things, right? So instead of saying, I'm unable to look at things objectively, why don't you say, I'm not the best at looking at things objectively. Or you can go a step up from that and say, looking at things objectively, I could improve in that regard. How much stronger is it to be like, you know what, I could improve at this, than I'm unable to do this?
I think that when you say it that way, it shows that I have a negative mindset and that it's not a growth mindset as well, and that it was a leak, and I see that.
That's actually another phrase that you had earlier today. I did hear you say in one of your games, you said, that's a leak, which I actually disagreed with in the moments, simply because when you say that's a leak, that implies you're making a categorical error, right? That this is just something you're doing wrong and you need to correct. And I think you just made a circumstantial mistake, and it was not a leak. You just made a mistake in the moments, and it's not like you were even punished for it in the game.
You know what my other mistake might be there is not understanding what leak means, because I've heard it on two podcasts ever. So my mistake was not understanding that phrasing at the time. And I think that I definitely have room for improvement, and I'm happy to hear that I've been relatively objective in the content that I put out that you saw. It's interesting to note that when I was talking to you, I was thinking about how hard it is to look at things that you are doing and things that you're not making progress on with an objective lens. And I think I said, as you said, I'm not able to look objectively, whereas obviously I am able to look objectively, maybe not 100%, but the true path, as you're saying, would be to try to improve that percentage and recognize that it's not always objective, but
well, in general, I mean, when we're talking about, I mean, we're dealing with a zero-sum game, right?
Yeah.
We're gonna do a lot of losing in this game, just plain and simple. You're gonna do a lot of losing in this game, and it's important to when you are losing or about to lose, to start being mindful of your language and choose to not use emotional language, because it's not useful. But objective language can be useful because you can learn from your loss. I have a few metrics here to help people keep it useful. The first is make observations, not judgments. And this goes to both yourself as well as your opponent, right? So many people punt and then they say, oh, I'm terrible. I'm so bad at Magic the Gathering. No, you just made a mistake. It happens. Let it go. And recognize what it was so you don't repeat that same error. Alternatively, how many times have you heard someone or been guilty of this yourself say, man, I lost to a bad player. My opponent was just terrible. What value does that provide? It has no merit saying, you know, my opponent was bad and making a judgment upon them. You don't know if they're a bad player just because they made one mistake or they played one game of Magic poorly. There's probably people out there that think I'm a bad player, but guess what? I was probably drunk while we were playing because I used to play a lot of Drunken Pauper back in 2019 because I had a sobriety issue after my shoulder injury, you know, and there were some sloppy games in there. And if that's the only lens that you've ever seen me, then you may have left with thinking that, you know, I'm a terrible player. But it's not useful to have that judgment. You know what's more useful is recognizing what mistake your opponent made that you thought was bad, and then remembering it in the future so that you can exploit them.
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of moments where my opponent has made a mistake, and you can potentially force someone else to make that same mistake if you can recognize that the mistake has occurred.
Or even the same person later. And that's true more on the local level than the MTGO level, because you're going to play against the same players every week at your local game store, but you might not play against the same opponents every week in the league. But what's important is it useful? You got to keep it useful, right? So making value judgments is not useful, whether for yourself or for your opponent. And another thing that we do that I don't think is particularly useful is, generally speaking, at tournaments, when you run into your friends in between rounds, and it may have been a round or two since you've seen them, what's the first question that gets asked?
How are you doing?
What's your record? Right? That's just a different way of phrasing it, you know? What we should be asking is, how are you playing? Are you playing well? That's way more important, because that's something you have control over. You have control over how you navigate loss, and you have control over your own plays. You have control over your reactions to events. You don't actually have control over your record. You can get top decked. It happens all the time. You might have mulliganed to oblivion. There's nothing you can learn from that. It happens. But we focus too much on winning and losing. And we reward winning too much, and we ignore losing too much as a result. And I know, Kelly, you say you just don't talk about all the times you go 0-2 drop. You should.
I did, yeah.
You should. You should talk with yourself first about those 0-2 drops as opposed to ignoring them. And see if there's anything to learn from how you played. See if those 0-2 drops had to do with a poor mulligan decision. Or maybe you sideboarded incorrectly. See if there's lessons there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate you can't see me just staring at the mirror and nodding. But that's fine, man. Everything you're saying is absolutely true. The thing that stands out to me in I did put out a video of this. I was trying really hard to get a 5-0, and I was very emotionally invested in my last match. And I was up against a Boros Bully player who had played a Relic, and I was giving them some tongue, and just, you know, on my mic, and I was thinking that I had the game locked up. They tap out. I have just one card in the graveyard, and I cast my Sage's Rodenizen. I cast my Archaeomancer. It automatically gets back my one card in the graveyard. They decline to tap to remove that card, and I realized at that moment that I've targeted my opponent with the Sage's Rodenizen, and now I'm screwed because I've lost the game. I cannot flicker my Archaeomancer to combo kill them because they can just tap the Relic to eat the flicker at that moment, and then they'll kill me on the swing back. So it was the first time I'd ever experienced that specific situation. I think after I got upset with myself for a moment for missing it, I did take it into account and realize that it was a mistake, but I think learning from that was important and
not repeating it.
Yeah. And now I know, and now I see that. So now I can tell, hey, this is a moment where this situation could occur, and I can make the correct play.
See, that's useful. Beating yourself up for that mistake, though, that's not useful. That does you no good. That, in fact, makes it harder to win. Not just the game you're playing, but the next game, maybe even the next match, maybe even the next two or three matches, depending on how badly you beat yourself up for each mistake you make. Right? And so I have another, and just so the last thing that I mentioned that was make observations, not judgments, right? I have another suggestion for the two of you and as well for all the people listening. At the start of an event, whether it's a league, whether it's a game, whether it's the challenge, recognize what your worst case scenario is, and then recognize it's not so bad. So your worst case scenario for the challenge is you've lost $35. We all have jobs, right? Maybe you had a disastrous league, right? And you went 0-3 drop. And maybe you should think about that the minute you click enter league. What's my worst case scenario? I go 0-3 drop. I'll lose $10. Well, recognize you don't grind MTGO for a living. So it's not that bad. You're not losing money that you will be unable to recoup, or you will not put yourself under any financial stress for having lost $10. Be mindful of what the worst case scenario is before you agree to do something. And then recognize it's really not that bad. And then you'll feel a lot more free. Or you should, at least. I know I do. Everyone reacts to things slightly differently, to moderately differently. But it's important to be mindful and be prepared for the worst case scenarios. So the last metric that I have for, you know, keeping all this in perspective here is that going back to the thought experiment, right? If we get to choose how we perceive reality, if we have control over that, then everything is an opportunity. Kelly, you're being very frustrated with Popper right now, because Familiars is having a rough go in the current metagame as Land Destruction is eating your Azorius Chanceries. What a tremendous opportunity you have to learn a new deck.
You're not wrong. I need to expand my horizons, I think, and not be stuck in my ways.
To be fair, you're
a lot of the times the other things that I've been playing are the things that are tilting me the most about Land Destruction, because they are literally land enchantment decks where I'm trying to make my Karus really big.
I was just about to say, your other decks are all even more vulnerable. But yeah, maybe.
But
non-bounce land decks.
The Land Destruction. I've had issues where if I end up not having any say, I guess, in what happened, then I become emotional about it, and I have to just, you know, accept that this is a deck that exists. It is possible for someone to blow up your land on their turn too if they are on the play. And that is a thing that can occur. So by entering a league, you know that this is a situation that may occur, and the frequency at which it happens, as you like, in the most objective way, the frequency in which it happens is going to be lower than the subjective experience of the frequency at which it happens. So we should just, you know, accept that situation and do the best that we can. If we're making a choice to be down to that deck, or you're making a choice to not have Gorilla Shaman in your sideboard versus Affinity, that you are getting into a situation, I guess, if that makes sense.
Well, sure. So I literally live my life this way, that I find opportunity in everything. I see everything as an opportunity, regardless how bad it gets. There's opportunity to be found. And you start by finding your silver linings, right? Yeah, at least this. Well, I had a bad day, but at least breakfast was good. Or, you know, I had a really, really bad day at work, but at least I got paid. So you can find these silver linings, and that's the start for being able to have a worldview that everything is an opportunity. And of course, this is easier said than done. I know you're thinking that. I don't know, whether it's the listener or it's both of you at once, just someone out there is thinking that is easier said than done. Of course it is. Losing isn't easy. Navigating loss isn't easy. I said that at the beginning of this conversation, that navigating winning is easier because it feels good, and navigating losing is much more difficult because it feels bad. But you have control over your perception of reality at the end of the day, should you choose to. Should you take the steps to implement it? And it's not going to be easy, right? It's going to be difficult until it isn't. Until it's just something that you do. You think that if you decided tomorrow that you need to do 30 push-ups in a day, well, that's going to be really difficult. If you don't do push-ups, maybe you have to do 10 sets of 3 to make that happen. Well, at some point, you're going to outgrow that, and you're going to be able to do 6 sets of 5, and then 2 sets of 15, until you are just able to do 30 push-ups, right? Don't expect to just become better at something because you've set your mind to it. It takes time, right, to grow. We're human. We're not machines. We can't just write a new code and update ourselves with an upgrade. You know, plug away at it. Start small. Have a goal in mind. And I have that sort of, I would leave that as the end goal for people. If you can recognize everything as an opportunity, it could take a very long time to get there. And I have sort of two heuristics for you guys. I've used both over the course of the last 2 years to, you know, work through loss, whether it's in life or in Magic or any other game that you're playing. And the first option is the easier of the two options. And what I call that is compartmentalization. And the way that I do that is I simply say, I'll be mad about this later. I'm not refusing my emotions. I'm not ignoring my emotions. I'm not bottling my emotions inside. Well, maybe for a little short time, but I'm just recognizing that if I get mad about this now, then there's zero chance that I'm going to win this game of Magic. There's zero chance that I'm going to play well because I'm going to be too busy being upset. So I simply say, I will be mad about this later. And then I do. I'm mad about it at the end of the day, or I'm mad about it in the shower. For years, I used to just let it all out in the shower because no one else could see it. That's my time, right? And so I'd be mad about things then and there. And I'd build up a list from the day before of things that I wanted to be upset about, but I recognize I should not be in that moment. And so I decided I'll be mad about this later. And that's perfectly fine. If you guys want to adapt that, it's the easier of these two options, of these two heuristics, right? The second one is, well, I'll put it this way. If you guys don't want to be upset about losing, stop getting excited about winning. And this was sort of the extension of the when I said that, you know, Diego was saying that, yes, that's what we want. We want him to shuffle with Ponder. Well, if you're getting excited over a little thing like that, chances are you're going to get frustrated over something small as well. Well, that's the micro level. Right, on the macro level, if you want to not get upset and not bothered by losing, then you don't get excited about your wins either. And I'm at this stage now. I'm past the compartmentalization stage. I've sort of outgrown that in my personal life. Kelly, yesterday you saw in Discord where I said, yeah, I made $200 playing poker. But did I glorify that win? Or did I say, I have room to improve? I really need to get better at this part of the game. I recognized where I need to improve. I wasn't concerned with the results. I was concerned with my process. I was concerned about the next time I get a play and what I can do to prepare myself for that.
That's absolutely true. I believe you decided to step out of your reach situation and move on to something that was closer to what you feel that your current skill set is at, and work to improve your skill set so that you can go back.
And this is more difficult to do. I recognize this is far more difficult to do than just say, I'll be mad about this later, is to just no longer get excited when you win and no longer get upset when you lose. That's difficult. And, you know, it's the cost you pay for not getting upset when you lose is no longer getting excited when you win.
Yeah, I think for me personally, this has been a crazy year, and I've been sick a couple of times, and I was considered myself to be a relatively fit individual previously, and it's all basically just gone at the moment. So it's important to remember, it's just something that I've been not doing a good job at, that, you know, progress is progress, and you may be at one point, but if you can continuously improve, then, you know, that's all you can really ask for yourself. You can't expect to just be where you were because it happened at one point. I think in Magic that's been happening to me as well, having had the access to Mystic Sanctuary and Familiars and just having the deck be absolutely busted, and now trying to continuously play the deck and become extremely proficient if possible, but, you know, the power level has been nerfed, and maybe not letting myself expand my own boundaries.
It's important to remember that you are not your results. You are your process. You are not your results because you do not have full control. You can only influence your results, but you can actually dictate your entire process. So you're not your results. You are your process.
Yeah. It's not something that most people actually have a process for, is grinding leagues and looking at replays and thinking about how their games have gone. It relates a lot to physical training for me, like what are my sets, what are my reps, how many days a week am I working out, what's my, you know, output capacity on some sort of rower machine, how much has the improvement been or not been. And this makes a lot of sense.
Diego, you've been quiet for a minute. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I've just actually been thinking back to especially I've been trying to think about the because recently this has been a big recent issue ever since I came back from hiatus like twice was I'd do the challenge on the weekend and then I would be completely burned out. I wouldn't play any Pauper for the next week. Like, I have the game logs up here. I just brought them up to check. And there's, like, week gaps in between them. I'll play maybe one day in between. And I think it even happens when I win. Like, I believe the week after I got second place with Boggles, I played once that entire next week. And I think it's kind of because I am, too, as you said, kind of emotionally involved in it. And it's kind of exhausting. It's, like, even when it's, I don't know, it's, and it does impact my results. I feel like I talk about this on stream, but I spiral really easy. So if I'm associating if I'm associating negative, even not even losses, but plays that are detrimental to me as something objectively bad, that's going to impact my mood and by extent my play for the entire rest of the event. I haven't played a lot, but I haven't 5-0'd for months. I have not sat down and won 5 consecutive games. And I don't think it's from a skill perspective. Like, I have done this many times before. I have done this with much worse decks. I think it just has to do with mental game. I think it's really embarrassingly titled, but I had on my channel a couple of, again, I hate that I titled these, but the world's most chill 5-0 with walls, and then the even more chill 5-0 with walls, followed by the most chill 5-0 with walls, where I just completely, like, I put on some radio, I sat back, and I just played. I published some 4-1s too. I just didn't attach myself to the result. And it ended
up. But you did, because you're talking about your 5-0s right now. Like, as soon as we switched over to you, you started talking about how it's been a while since you've had a 5-0.
No, not you're still, in you're that still moment. Thinking of things in terms no, of results. In this moment. Not then. What I'm talking about then is, like, I wasn't in those moments. I wasn't thinking results-based. I was just playing the game. Right now, I'm looking back at these and talking about them by results-based because I'm in the space of I'm trying to see how this has had an actual impact in my play and in my performance.
I think one of the things that I may have learned from the Pauper Players podcast or limited resources or something was that, like Frisiel, like you said, is that you cannot control anything other than what you can control. You can affect playing to your outs. You can affect, like you said, the process that you're taking. But if you get a bad shuffle, if the opponent has a good top deck, if you get paired in a way that doesn't work out for you, it's not necessarily your fault, and that's something that people can take personally. It's very hard to detach yourself from things that are beyond your control. I think I do a relatively good job at doing that on a high level, but it's certainly something that I need to work on.
Yeah, that's...
It's incredibly difficult until it isn't. And you've got to start somewhere. And so, Diego, for you, I suggest you start on the lower half of the slope and start being mad about things later as opposed to in the moment.
You can set a time when you record a league. At the end of the league, just go off.
Hit the stop. Just have a whole 5 minutes
of... No, don't stop recording. Just talk about it. Let it out. But keep it in until at the end. People would want to see that too.
Stay in the moment. Focus on what you can control. And I'm not going to pretend like if you don't have a better process, you won't have better results. That's sort of the beautiful payoff of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That, yeah. I don't want to misconstrue what I was talking about earlier.
I think you were correct in what you were trying to say in that the moments when you had success and you labeled in that way is that you were not attached to the situation as much as you're saying that you may get attached to things now.
Yeah.
And like Furso was saying, if you're cheering over a ponder versus just playing it out, doing the best you can and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
Just look at how you're phrasing your sentences. Phrasing is one of the ways which we can control our perception of reality, is how we choose to phrase these things. And again, you said you hate how you titled those episodes. Well, instead, you could say, you know what? I could have named those things something better. Mm. Or in the future, if I get a 5.0 and publish it, I'm going to take more time in my naming, or whatever you want to choose, but you don't have to choose to hate.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've, tried to do is be as positive as possible. I think I can recognize that I've slipped some, in terms of how I'm handling bad matchups and losses and becoming tilted. But I know that it's important to, like we said, recognize the situation, see if you could have made a mistake, and then learn from that experience. I think it was Paulo PVVDR who said he doesn't get mad when he loses. He gets mad when he played badly, and he could have controlled the situation and, didn't do something correctly, or didn't do what he knew how to do. But I think you do, obviously, what Fursile is saying is that you don't want to get mad about it. You want to just recognize the situation. But that's the thing that you need to take into account, is whether or not you did something that you could have controlled in a way that was... didn't provide the outcome that you were expecting or that you hoped for.
And I do want to just recognize there's a pitfall here if you balance this too hard on the side of positivity, to where you can actually be delusional, right? there's such thing as too much positivity. You don't want to look at yourself in the mirror and be like, I am the best popper player on the planet. Like, that's too positive. It's unrealistic, right? So, recognizing the opportunity in things is not just automatically, saying that it's all, that everything's positive, right? Life's not fair, right? It's not all fun and games. And even when we're playing our games, it's not always fun. And it's just, you got to be realistic, right? And I would encourage you, in so much as when you are playing a zero-sum game, to detach yourself as much as possible from your emotions. That way you can focus on your logical thought process. You will have more, you will have a better decision-making process as a result.
One of the things that really stands out that you said was, make sure you take into account what is the worst case scenario. A couple of times I have joined a challenge on the weekend, and my expectation of myself is to, you know, go all the way to win it. So worst case scenario is not winning it in my mind at the moment, when clearly it is not the worst case scenario. So when it's kind of points to, you shouldn't, I feel like I put my expectations in a way that was unattainable and just set myself up for failure. When at the same time, I had a moment where I started a challenge. It was a 7-round challenge. I went 4-0, lost 2. So I was just, and then I think I went, I was like 4-0 or 3-0 and lost 2, and then rallied and won out for the rest of it and came out in top 16, which was amazing. And I was actually very happy about it, but I could have taken it as I didn't make it. I was right there. I needed one win and in. So,
and people do that all the time. And to share a story from my personal life, the first time I was ever a guest on any podcast was in 2007 when I was Diego's age. And a certain gentleman in Southern Colorado named Chris Otwell, he used to go around and interview people for a podcast that he published while tournaments were going on. He would show up at all the tournaments, all the PTQs, you know, the pre-releases and whatnot. Pre-releases were different, and there was just one pre-release in the entire state, which is why he did it for those as well. And he'd just go around and he'd interview players as the event was going on. And somewhere out there on the internet is him coming up to me and saying, "Steve, you made top 8 last year. What's the expectation for today?" And I take the microphone and I say, "Anything less than first will be a disappointment." And I walk off. And at the end of the tournament, he comes up to me. He's like, "You took second. How do you feel?"
And oh my God.
I was disappointed because I literally put way too much of an expectation on myself. And the irony of this is that the prize was the same. I still got to go to U.S. Nationals that year. There was no difference between first and second. The only difference was I didn't get the trophy.
Man. Yeah. I grew up in the generation of everyone gets a trophy, everyone gets a medal, everyone gets a flag. And I do recall when I was something like 6 or 7, you know, not even making it one time, not getting a single thing, and it just blew my mind. So I'm glad at some moment my eyes were opened and that, you know, there is something to achieve, and like not setting yourself up for failure. I don't know, maybe that was a non sequitur, but it sucks to be putting yourself in a moment where you achieve such great success, but you see it as a failure. Like when I almost qualified for MOX for the Magic Online Championship Series and came in second. I molded to oblivion, like you said. And in the moment, it sucks because that qualification was a 5K minimum payout. But it, in, you know, long-term life-wise, it didn't matter that much. And it was a very awesome event to even get to that moment. There's a lot of things that went right for that to have occurred. So, objectively, I did really well. And I was happy about it.
I've had to navigate that same situation a whole handful of times in the last year because during COVID, I played a lot of online poker tournaments. There was plenty of days where I took 6th or whatever, or 5th or 4th. And in those moments, I would be mildly frustrated. And then I would just recognize that if at the start of the tournament, someone came up to me and said, "You can get 4th right now and not play," I would have taken it.
Exactly. When you're on a high from winning or from doing well, you put the expectation on yourself to not lose versus to do the best you can.
Yeah, it's just, it's really, there's so much give and take in how we choose to perceive reality that we have some control over. And, you know, I've seen this, you know, recently. 2 weeks ago, I was at Texas Card House in Dallas, and they had a large tournament going on that was a $600 buy-in. in first place of that tournament was $100,000 cash. And I was leaving for the evening, and the guy in front of me in line had just all of these 1K chips, right? Which is the max, the largest denomination at that establishment is $1,000. It's this lovely little plaque. And he just had like a grip of them. I was like, oh, did you just get knocked out of the tournament? And he's like, yeah, I took fifth. And he was like really disappointed. There were 1,308 players in this tournament. You have $16,000 in cash in your hands that you were in that tournament for $600 with. And all he can think about is how he didn't, how he had this opportunity for $100,000 and it slipped through his fingertips. And he just lacked the perspective in that moment. And I hope he found it the next day. I truly hope he's not beating himself up now to this day about how this opportunity slipped away from him, and hope he just recognizes what a tremendous return on his investment that he's made, and that he could have just taken like 73rd or 95th or 1,301. You know, there's so many worst case scenarios that he has the opportunity to count his blessings as opposed to imagine what his life could have been. Honestly, I lost $2,000 that day playing poker, and he was more upset than I was.
Do you think that this kind of the mindset that he had and the mindset that some Magic players have that could potentially keep them down, do you think that's like an American mindset or just like a something that's human that we really need to learn to get past? I see maybe some other players from overseas being a little bit more diligent in what they're doing, and they seem to have really good results. I don't know if that's because of their mindset or if it's because of their pure grit.
I think it's an interesting question. It's not one that I'm qualified to answer or really even speculate on, but ultimately, you know, I'm just going to keep beating this dead horse. Your perception of reality is often up to you to determine. And I did my best to demonstrate that through the thought experiment, as well as through talking about how language shapes reality. So, you know, focus on what you can control, recognize where you can improve, and start small and build up to something. And I don't know if maybe it's easier for Canadians than for the Swedes than it is for Americans. I have no way of knowing the cultural differences well enough to make a determination there.
That's true. I feel like I think in America we are the land of me, so I just don't know if other countries are not necessarily like that.
I'm not saying you have to cut yourself off when you recognize that you feel something. You just need to be mindful when you're feeling something. And right there, you caught yourself. You feel that way. And that's fine. No one's telling you to become a robot, Callie. But I do
okay.
I want you to be a robot while you're playing Magic the Gathering.
Just not when I'm interacting with other humans.
Well, listen, that's not healthy. It's not healthy to cut off your emotions completely, right?
Yeah.
But it's very useful in game.
I think I've had a lot of experiences in the last 3.5 years after having a kid where I felt very bad about the situation that I was in, and it took some self-reflection to realize that not everything is going to go your way, so that has been a teaching moment. And that, you know, even if something is astray, it's not going to be the end of the world, and that you can get past it and grow and learn from it, and that every moment is like still a teaching and an opportunity to learn something.
Yeah, just find the opportunity in it and then, you know, make an effort to move towards it.
I think it was like a Malcolm Gladwell book that I read originally, about happiness, but he was saying that your, like you said, your mindset affects your outcome, and that there was a factory floor or something where everyone was having a just having a bad day, and you know, everyone's output was relatively poor in general, and there was one worker who was always doing a much better job than everyone, and it turned out that he had turned it into a game, something that he could win and enjoy, and therefore every time he accomplished something it felt like a win versus it's a loss because I'm here for 10 hours. So mindset does matter.
I'm out of talking points.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think if I could just add something on there, I know it sounded like earlier that I was thinking about this just through a results-oriented perspective, but I feel like removing that emotional attachment to results just really, like, I'll end a challenge and I'll be burned out for the rest of the day, even if I, like, only play 2 rounds and drop. Just because I'm so involved. I don't know. Everything has to
you
have
were very involved
connotation. And
my sample size isn't huge, right? I recognize my sample size. I watched one match that you played, and you demolished your opponent. But you were very involved.
Yeah. It's very much a... You would have very much seen more of it. It is not something I can claim to have any sort of mastery or even like semblance of not struggling with it.
Well, I'm gonna let you in on a secret, Diego. I'm not perfect. This is something I've been working on for some time. I still have these moments of frustration, and I'm still working to improve on that myself. There's still room for me to improve, and I look forward to that challenge. But you're just not going to get there overnight, so don't expect anything unrealistic, right? Just start small and build, and build and build and build.
Yep.
And like I said, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be tough until it isn't.
Yeah, one of my favorite sayings is that everybody sucks when they start. You don't become you don't start out a master.
Yeah.
In terms of my beginning statements, where I wanted this to be, anyone who listens to this will be better off. I hope I've achieved that goal.
I do appreciate that you've come on and helped us talk about this. This has been a little eye-opening for me and helped me to look at myself. And I think if I can put these practices in, if I can put these things into practice, then it can help me not just be better in Magic, but I think that a lot of the things that are useful in Magic are useful in life. So I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, even if nobody listened to this podcast, you've definitely helped out at least one person over here. Really appreciate you coming on and talking about this.
Well, the responsibility now falls on you guys to get as wide of an audience for this, at least this particular episode, as you possibly can. And if you guys would like to, in the future, discuss navigating winning, and the pitfalls, because they're hidden pitfalls, we can have that conversation, too. It's not as useful, but the conversation exists.
It's a much lighter conversation.
We can look forward to that, for sure.
Yeah.
First, Al, do you think that anything could cause you to pick up your Pauper Players podcast again, or is WotC going to continue to ruin your format?
Listen, man, it's not even necessarily that right now. It's just that, so there's been times where I've worked on Pauper content and it just didn't get published, right? There's been a handful of times for that. The timing hasn't been great on my part. There's been scheduling issues. Ultimately, I want to work with Water. Water is tremendous to work with. He's exercised just the best judgment. He's shown better judgment than I've had in so many situations. And I just truly appreciate him. And that's not even scratching the surface with just how talented he is at audio, right? He's an audio god. And so at this exact moment, for the last 6 months, our schedules have not aligned. When I was available to make content, he's not available to make content, and vice versa, right? So it's just a matter of timing. If he and I both have the time and the emotional and mental bandwidth to make content collectively, we'll start the podcast up again. I'm never going to do more than 100 episodes of it. That's just never going to happen. I might change the structure of it as well, because it's very limiting. But I don't know, man. The podcast is interesting for me because I don't know if you guys can tell, but I play a very different role than who I actually am, because I'm being more of myself at this time, where I'm capable of just lecturing for 15 minutes at a time. I was going to be a professor. I don't know if you guys can tell, right? But like, I got no problem just talking. And the podcast requires me to be listening, to be good at listening, not good at talking at all. So I enjoy the podcast. It puts me out of my comfort zone. It forces me to improve at an aspect of life which I'm not particularly adept, and that's listening. You know, and it has a lot to do with attention deficit disorder, where it's genuinely difficult for me to listen when people talk. So I'm open to doing the podcast again in the future, and we'll just leave it at that.
Well, that's good to hear. I think that if anyone hasn't listened to the Pauper Players podcast, it still would be beneficial for you to go back and hit those old episodes, because I learned a great deal from many of the episodes, and I, you know, thanks again for being able to put those out. And if something does happen in the future, you can bet we'll be listening.
Yeah, it's honestly, even regardless of the fact that the metas have shifted and like some of the players don't even play anymore that you interviewed, I think it's really valuable, because a lot of things just stay constant no matter what deck somebody is playing. Or
so we'll go ahead and close it out there, but I hope that everyone listening has learned something, has something to think about, and if you didn't learn anything, hopefully you're the one person that's never getting attached to your results. If anybody wants to see us play Magic, you can check me out on YouTube at youtube.com/CaliKais, and Diego on YouTube as well, and Twitch.
Yep. Diego Brando MTG on both YouTube and Twitch.
Freestyle, you have the Pauper Players podcast, which can be found on RSS feeds. And then you did have a couple videos on YouTube of you playing Magic, right?
There's a few. I did a few streams. One's drunk, one's sober. And I also did a funny video when we did the Jundtron thing, back when Jund was a pure meme as opposed to some weird part of the actual metagame. And, you know, I actually have some plans for some more funny videos related to Pauper as well. We'll see what happens with those. Again, scheduling issues with the different potential partners with that. You know, I might make Pauper content in the future. Until then, I am available for mental coaching, or mental game coaching, rather, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
See you guys next time. Goodbye.